Welcome back to the Fostering Conversation podcast presented by Welcome Home Youth Advocacy. Our guest today is Pastor Chris Knight from Wakarusa Missionary Church, and the topic of the conversation is grief. Let's just dive right in. Mike, go ahead and kick us off.
Thanks so much, Brent. This is a topic that has been on my mind for a while, and it's something that I think, you know, people in the foster and adopted community deal with. But the reason it got brought up this week is, if I'm perfectly transparent, my adopted maternal grandmother passed away this last weekend, and so this has just been something that's been real close to my heart. So thanks for joining us, Pastor Chris, to talk about this and just kind of give your perspective on all this. You know, grief's a funny thing. I think there's a lot of different emotions that come with grief, whether it be, you know, anger or frustration or hurt or sadness. You know, for me, I have a weird way of dealing with grief. I don't have a lot of emotion into it, and I think it's partially because of what I went through as a kid. You know, you when I'm bouncing around a lot, and you move from different family to different family, you desensitize yourself to the loss and some of these things. And I don't think it's a really healthy way to deal with it, but it's kind of how I've learned to process this whole thing. I mean, I can sit and think back, and this is my last grandparent to pass away, and I haven't been emotional or cried when any of them passed, you know. So it's such an interesting thing, but this has been, it's given me a lot of time to reflect and think. And this grandma is the first person I can distinctly remember saying, "Mike, you're going to do really great things for God." As early as like 8 or 9 years old, like, she'd sit beside me at family holidays and tell me that. And so that had an impact on me. I mean, obviously I still remember it, and I think that's pretty incredible. So yeah, I kind of want to get into, you know, just a conversation about how we process grief, how we deal with grief, how we can biblically, you know, walk that line and walk that path. And how do we help, you know, especially if we're a foster parent or adopted parent, how do we help and understand these kids that are going through that and trying to process that, the, you know, just the gamut of emotions that come with that. So, yeah.
We are like a minute into this podcast, and you've already said a whole lot. Can I unpack just a few things before you ask me a bunch of questions?
Yeah.
You said something that I think is really interesting, and I think this is what I hear a lot when it comes to grief. You said, you know, we deal with grief a lot. We deal with these things a lot in foster families. Or I hear a lot of people say, "I'm dealing with grief. I'm dealing with grief." In reality, what they're saying is, "I'm experiencing grief," because they're actually not dealing with it. Mm. They're experiencing it. Dealing with it and experiencing it are two totally different things. A lot of us experience grief, but what we go on to deal with it. And it sounds like semantics. It sounds like just a small word. But in actuality, I think people, when they're going through it, they're saying, "I'm dealing with it." And not actually dealing with it is many times the way somebody actually deals with it, and that's neglect of it. They don't actually take the time to walk the path of grief. I'm probably more like you. I have a tendency to want to suppress it, to push it down, to not deal with it, to ignore it, and think that it'll go away, and then it comes back up in funny ways. Funny is probably the wrong word, too. It comes back up in horrible ways. All of a sudden, out of the blue, something can trigger it. Many times it's because I haven't actually dealt with the grief. So I know I didn't mean to sidetrack you there, but no, I thought that was an interesting, just as I was listening to how you process it, it reminds me how I think all of us tend to process grief, and that is we say we deal with it, but in reality is we're really not dealing with it.
Well, I think that's a really good point. It's something I do want to talk about, is like that I can look back and say I've never dealt with grief in a positive way. I've experienced it quite a bit. And so, you know, losing my birth family at 4 and all my siblings, and then bouncing around so much in that the time period I was in foster care and switching families pretty much every 6 months, and then, you know, my parents getting divorced after I got adopted 2 years later, like, there's grief in all those situations, you know, losing families and losing a family dynamic and losing relationships. I experienced it, but I never dealt with it. I learned to just shut down my emotions. You know, I even was having a conversation with my wife this morning. I remember the day that my parents sat us down to tell us they were getting divorced. And, you know, my sisters were crying and upset. And I was just like, okay, you know, and I was 9 years old. I probably should have been sad about it. But I had experienced that so much in my life at that point, and things had changed so constantly that I just was like, okay. And like you said, that it comes out in funny ways or terrible ways. So when I break relationships, I break relationships. Like, they are dead. In my mind, they're dead. Like, they don't exist anymore. It's just easier for me to, that's how I unpack things. I just, you're gone, you're out of my life. And so that's really hurt me in my adult life in a lot of ways. You know, when I moved out of my mom's house at 14, I didn't talk to my mom anymore. When I moved out of my dad's house at 19, I didn't talk to my dad anymore. You know, I've gone stretches with 10, 12 years without talking to people in my family just because they weren't there. And that's how I dealt with it. And it's manifested in, a lot of ugly things in my life. And then the emotions of that come out and you have to deal with it. But when you've not been equipped to deal with it and to process emotions, you do other things. Like, I drank to just keep my brain from having to deal with it, you know? Mm-hmm. And so how do we go through that? And I know this is different for each person.
That's right.
But how do we look at it, you know, in a biblical way? How do we deal with those things and those emotions in a healthy manner? Because I think grief can be an incredibly, incredibly healthy thing, because you get to a place where, you know, I had to grieve the loss of my birth parents, even though I never really knew them, you know, but it was healthy for me to get to a place to do that, because I didn't have to carry that anger and that frustration anymore, you know. And I think having God in your life helps a great deal, because he helps take some of that weight away, and understanding, like, you know, he's still there for me and he's always going to be there. And, you know, especially if you know that the people that have passed have a relationship, because then you know where they're going and you know what's happening there. But I don't, does my question make any sense?
Yeah. Again, I think there's a whole lot going on in that. So generally speaking, you're asking the question, how do we deal with it? First of all, it is different. There's a lot of differences. There's variables involved. There's personalities. I grieve differently than my wife grieves. We're two different types of personalities. For me, my range of emotions, I often joke about it with people in church, like, my level of excitement is like, yeah, and my level of disappointment is, oh, you know, like, I don't have these big, huge emotional swings. Others have way deeper swings, and I think managing that. So everybody's got a different personality. You come at it from a perspective of a follower of Jesus and somebody who doesn't. It talks to us in the New Testament about grieving as people who have hope, right? We have the ability to grieve as people who have hope when we follow Jesus, because we understand that this life isn't the end all. And that doesn't necessarily make the pain of loss any better or less stinging in the moment, because there's still a void, there's an absence. However, it gives us a hope to hang our hat on and look forward to another opportunity down the road to come. When it comes, so those are personalities, those are like follower of Jesus or not follower of Jesus, in perspective, eternal perspective in that. But I would say if the biggest challenge, as I see it, a counselor might tell you differently, as I see it, is people don't take the time to work on grief. Think about it. We're sitting around here as three married men. To be married, to learn to live in a relationship with our wives, to learn what they need, to understand all those things, it's taken us time. Why do we expect that all of a sudden, when something is a big loss, it should just be like we should be able to figure it out quickly? Relationships, whether they're in play or there's a void now, both take time to navigate the emotional side of it, but we don't take the time to do that.
It's really interesting that you say that, and I totally agree. You know, that's something my wife brought up this morning in our conversation. She said, you know, when you have a really close relationship with somebody and they pass, you know, she's like, it takes at least a year to get through that haze and that fog of losing them. And then it takes more time after that to actually get to a place where you're okay and, you know, you can get back to the normalcy of things. And but, you know, and you said we don't often take that time, but I would say from my experience, you know, as a kid going through that stuff, I wasn't given the time.
That's true.
I didn't have the time. You know, I moved families every 6 months, you know, and there's this expectation that when you move to a new family, you're going to be a happy, normal kid. And you're not given that time and that, you know, that understanding of how to heal from that and how to go through that process. Yeah. So I think there's a breakdown in that, you know, especially with kids in these types of situations, if mm-hmm. that makes any sense, because they're just not given the time.
Well, and this is a fostering conversation, right? Yeah. So let me shift a little bit what I was suggesting to you. You know, hopefully if there are fostering families that are listening to this podcast and you're working with somebody who has been through all of those types of transitions like you're referring to growing up, I think for the fostering family, time might not be the thing, but taking time to listen is allowing the child to process out loud. And, you know, I think sometimes when somebody is angry, when a kid is angry, we want a quick fix it. When somebody is sad, we want a quick fix it. When somebody is, you know, needs to vent or is just emotionally withdrawn, we want a quick fix it. And the reality is, I think in those situations, those take time as well and take patience. We guys tend to be fixers. And so you look at a kid who's now found themselves in a new foster home. They're behaving badly. They're not processing life well and all those types of things. Our desire is to quickly say, hey, come on, get over it. You got us, right? You know, you should be good. You should be happy. But what they're doing is they're processing past losses and then are protecting themselves from this loss someday, because they're saying to themselves, the likelihood that you're going to not be here very long is something I don't want to grow any more attached to. And so I'm putting up those walls while I've never torn down the past walls. So taking time and being patient and allowing them the appropriate time and space to vent, to process grief. I think I'm a firm believer that every one of us need a counselor. We all need somebody to talk to. And I even think for fostering families, who can you talk to begin to help a child through? But help a child get somebody to talk to as well.
Yeah, and these are really tricky situations for sure with, you know, kids that go through all this. And this goes back to something we talked about when me and you just had a discussion when, you know, before I spoke to the church and you said, you know, why should I be so selfless when I bring in a force? Like, I'm doing this great thing. Like, that's a hard thing to wrap your head around. And so to have a kid come in and be upset and not feel like it's not appreciated that you're giving them a home and you're giving them this, it's like, it's not that they don't appreciate it, but they're dealing with other things. They're dealing with loss and, you know, a lot of other stuff that goes into that. And so understand, you got to kind of put your place into the kid's shoes and where they're coming from. And like you said, you build up these walls, you want to keep people at arm's length because, you know, like the possibility is they're not going to be here long term. So I don't want to get attached. I don't want to lose another person. I don't want to deal with that hurt again. That's a really, I really appreciate that because that's something where, you know, I can understand that and understand, you know, these kids, you know, people or like, well, why isn't there this more of an attachment? Why do these kids, when they get to 18, they just want to go back to their bio family and they just want to leave and they don't want to be with, and it's like, okay, like there's this, you know, inherent desire to gain back what has been lost, you know, and I think these kids have it. And it's not that they don't care. It's not that they don't appreciate what you did. And it's not that they don't love you. It's just, they don't know how to cope and they don't know how to deal with that and how to handle it.
I think I agree with you. I also think that one of the challenges of people trying to help somebody else through grief is that we think we have to solve their grief with words, and so many times our words don't help. I'm thinking of the number of times of late where somebody has lost a child, somebody has lost a loved one, a spouse, a parent, and standing in that line at a visitation and people trying to offer words of help and encouragement, they're many times faced with the idea, these words aren't helping, but your presence was nice. Sometimes it's just putting an arm on a shoulder and just saying, hey, I care about you. I value you. I understand what you're going through a little bit, but I don't understand the fullness of it. I just want you to know I'm here. I care. I love you. If you ever need to talk to somebody, I'm here. But too many times we try to tell somebody, okay, just get over it. It's going to be better. Your greatest days are just ahead. This is going to, you know, this is that. And the words are just words. And sometimes the best way to help somebody through grief is our actions. And that's being present and available. letting them know that we've modeled a home where you can be safe to process these things, but I'm not going to try to over communicate. You know, this is what you need to do to fix yourself. Does it make sense?
Yeah, I don't, you know, it's not about, it's not about fixing. And it's like we said, you know, grief is, I think, very personal for each and every person, and they're going to handle it in a different way. And I think, you know, one of the things you said is really key is giving people that safe space to just, you know, feel value in their grief and their emotions and feel validated in some way. Because like you said, I think a lot of times people are like, well, you know, everything happens for a reason and, you know, this too shall pass and all these platitudes that we hear when that kind of stuff comes up. And that's like, that's hollow. And I don't want to hear that. Mm-hmm. It's the last thing I want to hear.
Don't you feel like people either say something like that out of ignorance or they try to normalize your situation because they've been through something and they want you to know that they've been through something too. And so then they overcompensate that way. That's been my experience with grieving, has been just experiencing people trying to say too much because they don't know, or saying too much because they know what grief is for them. But like you said, Mike, it's so personal to what, you know, you're going through that a lot of times your experience, even though you've experienced it in some way, shape or form, it doesn't help me that you're just sharing your experience with me. So,
yeah, I think, you know, there's a lot of good intentions behind a lot of those things that people say, but sometimes good intentions can hurt a lot more than you ever think they do, because, you know, it comes across as, well, you don't accept my emotion and what I'm dealing with. Like, you're just trying to pass it off and you're just trying to gloss over it. And I think that's often more hurtful than just being in, like, you said it or you said, I can't remember which, but it's like, it's climbing down in that hole with that person. You know, it's getting into the ditch with them and being there with them and being in the moment with them, as opposed to trying to pull them out, you know, because sometimes pulling out's not what they want and not what they need at that time.
That's right.
They need somebody to be in it with them.
Yeah. You know, I talk to folks oftentimes about the valleys of our life. We want to live on the mountaintop experiences of our life, and we get into the valleys, those tough times of life, whether it's through loss, grief, pain, whatever that is. And our prayer to God is, get us out of this as fast as we can. But I've tried to change my prayer over the last number of years. God, help me learn all the lessons I need to learn in the valleys, so that when I'm back onto the mountaintops, I can appreciate the lessons that I've learned. I think too many times we try to rush out of those valleys, and I like that analogy. I didn't say it. I'm pretty sure it must have been Brandt, unfortunately. That was a really good thing. I wish I could have claimed that one. But that idea of getting down in the hole with somebody is not rushing them out of that moment. I want to come out. I want to go through the experiences of life and be better at the end of it, not continue to be shattered and broken and put up more walls. And sometimes that means I got to sit in that valley. You look in the scriptures, right? Job sat with friends for a long time. Now, that wasn't necessarily a great experience with his friends, but he sat. He didn't just get up and go, all right, let's get on with life again.
Right.
I mean, they processed it. Right. Jesus wept. I think that's the shortest verse, right? John 11:35, if I'm not mistaken. And yet at the same time, he had every ability to prevent that death.
Yeah.
And he already knew what was coming once resurrection happened, but he wept. It means he cared enough to have that emotion that it's okay to understand loss.
Right.
And I, as a pastor and a follower of Jesus, we have somebody that we can turn to in those seasons of grief who understands us, and that's Jesus. He's promised to never leave us or forsake us. And I think clinging to that relationship, and it's okay to be able to be upset with Jesus and say, I don't understand it. I don't get it.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
I process things in, like, pictures. And so the world has built this picture of, you know, if somebody's struggling, if they're in the trenches, if they're in the hole, if they're in the valley, however you want to say it, then we're encouraged to offer a hand to pull them out, right? And that's that savior mentality of, okay, I can help you out. But in reality, what they need you to do, even if they don't know they need you to do it, they need you to jump down in the valley with them. And like you guys are alluding to, sit in it for a little bit, process it with them, listen, just be with them. I think some of my best friendships are when, you know, we're going through hard times and those people just come over and we don't talk about the problem at all. We just are with each other. And Jesus offers that to us as well. I'm thinking back a little bit, 5-6 years ago, going through my own grief and both of my parents dying within 4 months of each other. And Mike, kind of like what I think you were alluding to and some of what you were alluding to, Chris, I didn't deal with grief at all that first year. Francie used to just say things like, "You're grieving." And I'd be like, "What are you talking about? Like, I haven't shown any emotion." She goes, "I know. That's how I know you're grieving." I'm like, "Oh my word." I didn't like that at all at that time. It took about a year, and we were just reflecting on this a couple of days ago. Ironically, the same day you text me and said, "Hey, can we do a podcast and we're going to talk about grief?" And I'm like, "Great.
Wonderful.
Wonderful." Yeah,
what a happy topic.
Yeah. And we were discussing this idea of, you know, I spent the first year kind of working off adrenaline. I mean, you go through all the stuff, right? You go through the weird family dynamics. You go through selling off different estate items. You go through, you know, who gets, you know, mom's Bible or dad's watch, or like you go through all that. And I'm just like, I didn't want any of it at the time. I don't care. That's not what mattered. I just want them back. And so like, I was just numb to everything, very apathetic. Like, I don't care. My sisters, like, you guys can deal with it. And just kind of suppressed everything I was really feeling until the next holiday. And it was like a year had went by, and now it's the next holiday. It's not new necessarily anymore. It's just anger. And so I experienced it. And you talked about this at the beginning, Mike. I have experienced it through anger over the last 5 or 6 years in different seasons. February is a hard season for me. My dad passed away in February, and my mom's birthday is in February. And so, like, everything just starts to boil up in February. And so Francie, being the perfect ally she is to me, she actually demonstrates what it means to jump down in the hole with you. There'll be times in February, the last 5 or 6 years, where she's like, "Hey, why don't you just go to the coffee shop this evening? Just spend some time with God." Like, that's the kind of getting down in the trenches that I need. Like, she sees me before I even do anything that, you know, on the surface that shows that I'm grieving. She's aware. She doesn't try to offer words. Sometimes she'll bring up good memories, and she does it so well. And it encourages me to do that with others.
You know, you brought up something there at the very end, just share memories.
Yeah.
Sometimes I think we just have to be able to be open with somebody and say, "You want to talk about it?" There are times I lost my dad 4 years ago, and there are times I like to hear stories of my dad, the impact of him. But I think sometimes people are afraid to talk about him. And that talking about him brings back legacy. It reminds you of memories. And some people aren't ready to talk about those. They're still dealing with it. But just, again, engaging in those conversations.
Yeah.
But just be open enough to ask.
Yeah. Yeah. And I need her to tell me when I have moments that are not logical and that are just almost borderline explosive in some ways. I need her to redirect me and say, "This is part of your grieving." And I read once, and I don't know what you guys would say on this, is it doesn't ever really stop. You start to deal with it better, but you're always experiencing it in some way, shape, or form. And I don't know what you guys would say on that, but I've felt that at least.
Yeah, my words have been, it doesn't go away, it just gets different. Mm-hmm. And different can still have all kinds of variables to it. Sometimes different is I'm grieving differently. For me, like what you said with Christmas, our first Christmas without my dad, it was okay. But it was the second one that mm-hmm. surprised me. Mm-hmm. Anger wasn't so much, but the deep sense of grief, like loss, wow, this is real, is different. So everybody deals with it just differently.
Yeah.
Well, I think, you know, you bring up really interesting things, and I talked about this around Christmas time. So the holidays are always really hard for me mm-hmm. because of not having stable family. And, you know, that's always a difficult time for me. That's when all this stuff comes up in my head, just because, you know, you long for that at that time. You know, and so as adults, you know, we're kind of able to recognize when those moments are going to come up and when that time of year happens and when we deal with those things. And so, you know, kids don't necessarily have that luxury because they haven't been able to process and they haven't been able to, you know, kind of wrap their head around, you know, this is when this is going to happen because of this reason. You know, and I think a lot of times we as adults are like, well, what is going on with this kid? Why is he acting out right now? And, you know, so there's some things there that you can be kind of cognizant of and be like, oh, you know, this is when they moved this past year or whatever that looks like. And so it brings up things.
Yeah. I wrote a blog about 5 or 6 years ago, too, as I was grieving. That was something I did. And I think I grieved, too, as a child in a similar way with my dad leaving. And the words I wrote were, I realized that some people leave you and some people are taken from you. So there's two different types of grief in that scenario, right? And I don't think one's worse than the other. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm sure that the experience is definitely different when somebody chooses to leave you versus when somebody is taken from you, if you will.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think, you know, that's kind of one of the things that I was going to get into is, you know, shifting a little bit. How do you then, you know, for a foster kid or an adopted kid, how do you grieve someone you didn't even know, really, that being your bio family? You know, if you didn't, but there's that connection that's inherently there. There's that loss that comes with that. Like, I had to grieve my bio family, you know, my parents, because I haven't seen them since I was 4 years old, and I had to get to a place where I could let go of the anger and the hurt and the resentment of them giving me up, if you will, you know. And I think that's something a lot of these kids don't know how to handle. And they're like, why? You know, why did this happen? There's this, why did they let go of me? Why couldn't they love me? Why couldn't my life look normal, quote unquote? And then, you know, Ruth had told me a story about a kid she knew that was adopted growing up, and he had found who his dad was, but found out he had passed away, you know, his bio father. And he's like, how do I grieve this? How do I grieve for this man I didn't know, but there's this connection there because he was my father, you know? Mm. And I don't even know how, like, I don't know how that looks. And
I think I've shared this on this podcast before, but right after my mom passed away, there was somebody from California who reached out to our family. My mom, we had gifted her ancestry.com for whatever reason. My sisters did a couple years before she passed. Anyway, there was this guy about my age who reached out after mom had passed away and said, hey, I think your family, I think my mom is your sister. And we had never, like, we were just like, no, you got the wrong people. Well, as we told my older brother is 22 years older than me, has a different dad, and there's a long story with that. As we told my older brother this, he knew. And so apparently my mom had a daughter after she had my older brother, and my grandfather, my mom's dad, she was living with my grandma and grandpa. And he said, you can have one kid in this household, but you can't live here and have two. And so she was forced to give the second one up for adoption. And so anyway, she found us, or her son found us. And we met my older sister. Her name is Rhonda. And it was wild, but she had that question. Why'd she keep you four and not me? And so then, you know, we had to walk through a lot with her, okay? But now you're looking at my brother, who's had a pretty normal life. My two sisters, who have had success and had pretty normal lives, relatively. And then me, relatively as well, pretty normal life. And then she struggled with drug addiction, alcoholism. And really, this was a last-ditch effort for her kids to get her help, was finding her family, her bio family. And it ultimately didn't go well, as she just needed, she wanted money from us, and for reasons that were related to some of the things that she was doing. But that was a wild experience for us. But then my mom took that to the grave, you know, like we never knew about it. My brother kept it a secret until my mom was gone. But her question was, why did she keep you guys? And that's a valid question. And she was adopted, Mike, by doctors. Mm. It's not like it was a wealth thing or she was put in poverty. Like, that was not it at all. But doctors. But she dealt with that. Oops. Those questions her whole life.
When I think, you know, grief and those types of questions, when they go unchecked and they're just manifested as anger mm-hmm. and hurt and frustration, it leads to those those choices that we make in life to block out that grief and to like I said earlier, grief can be very healthy, mm-hmm. but it also can be really damaging if it's not dealt with in the proper way, mm-hmm. you know, and you don't learn how to handle it and you don't, you know, come to terms with it to some degree. You know, there's a lot of people in this world that have gone down a pretty awful path because of grief and yeah. unresolved grief.
Grief and identity this is a very common bond, I think, because when we're going through grief, I think the question and some of the things you guys were talking about, what's my identity? We're in a series here at the church in Daniel. These young teenagers get carried away from their life of normalcy, their life of elitism in a lot of ways. They were royal people, get carried into slavery, and it didn't. Their identity didn't waver because their identity was placed in God and who he said they were. And I think that is a very key component. Again, I'm not trying to bring this back to a spiritual side of things, but in grief, sometimes it's our identity. For you with foster care, what is my identity? Who am I? Who were they? Mm-hmm. Who are they now? Who is to come? What is my identity in all of this? And when we struggle with identity issues, I think we will grieve differently. Mm-hmm. Does that sound fair?
Yeah for sure. Mm-hmm. I think I've used this metaphor before. You know, when I was going through those hard seasons in my life, I felt like I was just floating and going with the current and just kind of didn't have a purpose and didn't just, you know, and I think that relationship with Christ can be that lighthouse that you can, oh, you know, I have that and I can hold on to that, as opposed to just being like, I don't know, you know, what to do and what to do with any of this. You know, it's that whole identity thing. You know, we find our identity in people and in all these temporary things, you know, and they're bound. We're setting ourselves up for failure when we do that, because they're all bound to go away. Mm-hmm. You know, Christ is the only permanent thing that we can really hold on to. But yeah, I think that's a really good point. The one thing I wanted to touch on is, I wanted to foster parents. You know, I think they deal with grief as well. When you have kids in your home and you invest in these kids and you love these kids and then they're gone and you don't know when that's going to happen. You don't know. I mean, that can happen at any time. It can happen in 6 months. It can happen 3 years down the road, you know? But I think number one, don't let that scare you from fostering, because the kids need that. They need to know somebody loves them that much and that they can, you know, they will grieve them, because I think a lot of these kids feel like no one cares whether they come or go a lot of the time anyway. And that's part of the problem. They feel like nobody has that much love for them when, you know, they've been given up or when whatever that looks like. I don't know about advice, but what advice would you give, you know, parents in those situations to help them cope and deal with those types of things? I know it's a kind of a weird question, but
yeah, it's not a weird question, but again, I think it does come back to everybody does things differently. So I can offer what I do, but that might not be great advice for everybody to walk away and go, oh, I'm gonna do that too. The way I deal with things, okay, as a pastor, right, there are people who come and go from our church. You know, there are people who come into our lives and go out of our lives. Some people who are here for a season and then they've moved out of the area. I've often looked at it as, okay, I am going to, for whatever season I get, to try to make as big an impact into their lives as possible for the time, for such a time as this. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a lifetime thing. So I think as a foster parent, I'm looking at the opportunity that if I got 6 weeks, if I got 6 months, if I get 6 years, I'm going to do everything I can in that time period to hopefully make an impression upon them, and help them down the road, knowing in our minds this is probably not a long-term, lifelong thing. But the other is they become adults, and you never know what circles back. Mm. You never know what that impression is. I am one who tries really hard not to live in my past, but I also try not to live in my future. And I think that's the boundary that we have to set, even as foster parents. Live in the present. And let's, you know, if tomorrow's the next day, is the day that they leave, then I've done everything today that I can do.
It's interesting. I had a conversation with Denny last week before my grandma passed, and kind of told him, you know, some of the stories about her and just, you know, what I had shared with you guys about her, you know, believing in that I was going to do work for God in some way, shape, or form. And, you know, and my grandma had dementia in the last number of years of her life. And he's like, you know, Mike, the interesting thing is, though, the Bible tells us, you know, those things that she spoke to you about and that she prayed for you about, those prayers never die. Those are constants, and God always hears those, you know. And so you don't know, and I've said this a number of times on the podcast, you don't know the impact and the difference you can make in a very short period of time in a kid's life. And it's just, you know, that example of love and caring and giving them that stability in the moment. You know, I think so many kids in these situations long for that stability, and just giving them that moment and that safe space to be in it and be with them in it while you have them. You know, it's not, like you said, it's not guaranteed to be a long-term thing, but you can give them tools and you can give them things that they can use for the rest of their life as they move forward from your home. And I think that's a really neat thing.
Yeah, I think the last thing I would say on that is that it's not just true of foster parents. That's true of us in homes with our own children as well. There's a day coming, they're gonna fly the nest, hopefully, right? <Man. laughs> And you want to have been able to say, I think I've lived in the moment enough that when they leave, they have a good solid foundation around them.
Yeah. It goes back, again, Mike, to what you said in the beginning. They're not ours to begin with.
That's right. Right?
We just are stewarding their lives and hopefully pointing them to Christ and eventually releasing them to his will.
Well, I want to thank you guys so much for, you know, joining me today and having this conversation. It's, you know, it means a lot, and it's just been, yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks for joining the conversation, and remember to check us out on social media or our website, welcomehomeyouth.org. Until next time, we pray that God blesses you in the days ahead.